Network, proudly presents The Jay's Blade Show. With your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as a special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, as always, one of the best producers in the business, and he's absolutely right. I'm Jay Flama, and you are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Network, Radio Network. It was fantastic having Fred Atwater on the show for the first two segments from Back 9 Network and also from Golf News Network. It was a lot of fun talking about the tour with him. And as you all know, Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best. It is the spiciest, the boldest, the freshest, the most amazing tasting hot sauce out there. It's made by former golf writer John Byra. It's on every table in the Deep South, and it should be on yours when it says JB's. It's the best. And later on, our next guest is going to have a chance to win himself a bottle of JB's Best and a t-shirt that says I'm a hottie. And we've had him on before. He's one of the pantheon of great guests on the Jay's Place show. He's a former editor-in-chief of Sports Illustrated and Golf Magazine. He's a multi-published author and one of the nicest guys out there. And my neighbor in New York City, so give a warm Jay's Place welcome back to Kevin Cook.
Hi, Jay. How are you?
Well, I'm always better when I've got you on the show. How about yourself? How are things in our gorgeous city?
Well, not bad. I was looking forward to the premiere of a movie based on Tommy's Honor, which has a chance to get some attention. The movie comes out in April. It's brilliantly directed by Jason Connery and well acted. And I don't know if listeners have a chance to take a look at the trailer, but check it out. It's one of the best trailers of a golf movie I've ever seen, so we'll take that as a start.
Yeah, let's back up for a half a second so all of our listeners, not just the ardent golfers, but all of the Jay's Plays listeners, can get a little frame of reference. You wrote the book Tommy's Honor several years ago. It was your first novel in quite a while, wasn't it?
Well, yes, and of course not a novel. It's a nonfiction book. It's based on the real story of Tom Morris. Old Tom is familiar to so many golfers, but his son, Tommy, was an even better golfer. We're talking about the dawn of professional golf in Scotland in the 1860s and 70s. And the movie, the book, and the movie are about their relationship and about the ultimately tragic story of Tommy Morris, and the way that his father kept his memory alive. And I think it has an awful lot to do with the beginning of golf as we know it. It's remarkable to me that, baseball fans know all about Jackie Robinson and Joe DiMaggio and Babe Ruth, and golfers tend not to know very much about the beginnings of their game. So I hope the book and the movie that's been made of it will help remedy that.
Well, I'll tell you, Kevin, okay, this takes me all the way back to the day that I truly became a golf writer, that I moved from being a blogger and an internet writer to writing for a legitimate magazine with a real job and a real editor. Because back in 2005, when I joined Golf Observer, and big thank you to Sal Johnson and the wonderful Matt there, my very first assignment was to tell the story of old Tom Morris for publication during the St. Andrews Open Championship of 2005. And I sat there when I got that assignment and I said, my God, I'm absolutely horrified. Everyone's going to know what a fraud and a fake I am because I don't know the first thing about old Tom Morris or young Tom Morris. But they put me in touch with a great historian from St. Andrews that I'm sure you're very much aware of, okay? The man to ask on anything. And together with Sal finding some wonderful pictures, I was able to tell the story not only of old Tom and his relationship with Allen Robinson and the battle they had over the feathery and the gutta percha golf ball, but also the story of the rise of young Tom, the son. My favorite story, and you can tell me if this one's true or not, being the time, the very first time that young Tom showed up at a tournament with his dad, apparently it was either Willie Parker or Mungo Park who said, "What did you bring the wee one with you for?" And apparently old Tom said, "You'll see soon enough," knowing that the kid was going to whoop him.
Well, that's absolutely true. And in that very first tournament, which was Tommy's day, bumped another young player who was supposed to be the best young player in Scotland, and then, of course, challenged Willie Park and all the rest. And then soon went on to dominate the early Open Championships.
In fact, he did it so much, he won three championships in a row. A lot of fans may or may not be familiar with the fact that the Claret Jug was not the first award given out to the winner of the Open Championship, was it, Kevin?
That's absolutely right. The first award was a red leather belt called the Championship Belt. And the rules in the very first Open in the 1860s were any player who won the Open three times in a row would get to keep it forever. Well, Tommy did that. Tommy got to take that belt home, and it's still displayed at the R&A, by the way, beside the claret jug. There was not even an Open the next year because they didn't have a trophy to play for. They waited around and then eventually chipped in. The various clubs chipped in and bought a claret jug, which would become the trophy, which is still the trophy. And today, the very first name on that claret jug, as anyone who goes into the R&A can see, is that of Thomas Morris Jr.
It's a beautiful trophy, too, the claret jug. I've heard the old belt was called the Moroccan belt.
Well, it was Moroccan. They called it Moroccan leather. The leather came from Morocco, and it was red colored. It was funny. There was a famous buckle, a big buckle on the front of it, like a boxer's, you know, the heavyweight championship, or the MMA people get a championship belt if you win, and it's got a big brass buckle on the front, the silver buckle on that Moroccan leather belt, the Tommy one.
Yeah, they totally look ostentatious in that thing.
and it featured a golfing scene, but it wasn't so well made because one of the golfers is swinging a club, and you could see his hand behind his shoulders, but there's no club. He's like apparently facing.
But still, it was amazing. They brought it back out in the 2010 U.S. Open, British Open, to show it off to everybody to celebrate the 150th anniversary.
Right.
And I remember one golf writer, Stephanie Way, got to try it on, and it looked like one of those, you know, girls around the ring at a wrestling match in that thing. She's so small, the belt's okay.
There's a funny story about that, because Tommy Morris, when he won the belt and got to keep it, he's still a young man, and he's a skinny fellow, and the belt doesn't really fit him. So in the most, you can see him with his fist on his hip. And that's because if he took his fist off his hip, it would just fall down. He had to put his fist on his hip to hold the belt around his waist.
Well, they definitely eat an awful lot of rice in Morocco, and an awful lot of those tall cone-shaped tagines and such. So I can see how they might need a size 42 instead of a size 36.
Tommy would have had more haggis. Yes, to need more haggis to fill up and keep that belt around his waist.
Now, the story of young Tom Morris, though, is a very sad one as well, because even though he ended up winning a total of six Open Championships, He died very young, and most people think he died of a broken heart. Can you tell all of the listeners out there the sad tale of his post-open life?
Well, it's a bit of a spoiler as far as the film is concerned, but your listeners are in the know, so they probably know. Tommy died at the age of 24. He did not die of a broken heart. He died of an aneurysm, but it was only a few months after his wife died in childbirth, and Tommy and his father, Old Tom, were off in North Berwick playing another match. They didn't get back in time, and to some degree, Tommy's heart really was broken by that. He drank much more afterward. He played a famous match in a blizzard, and he died on Christmas in 1875, at the age of only 24, perhaps the greatest player, certainly the Tiger Woods at this time, the best young player that golf has ever seen. And anyone who goes to St. Andrews needs to visit the memorial, the beautiful memorial that shows him teeing up a ball in the St. Andrews Cemetery.
Now, tell us a little more about this famous match in the blizzard. And is that going to be part of the film as well?
That's definitely part of the story. And it was hard to shoot. Jason Connery had to use a brilliant set of CGI that couldn't even have been available a few years ago. I was there for part of the shoot, and there was artificial snow on the ground, but you can't make the whole world full of snow except with today's special effects, and it's absolutely perfect in the film. Tommy did play a marathon match in a blizzard when he was sick and he was probably drunk and terribly depressed after the death of his wife and child. His father, Old Tom, didn't want him to continue, stopped the match. Tommy insisted on playing on and died shortly after. That match against an English champion is I think, brilliantly realized in Jason Connery's movie, and it's absolutely historical and factual.
Now, why was it a marathon match?
Well, in those
and
days,
why was it a blizzard out?
Right, in those days they didn't just play 18 holes, they might play 36 holes. This match went on for almost a week, and it was one of the worst blizzards in St. Andrews history. Tommy's friends wanted him to stop. He insisted on continuing, and this was against a young English player named Molesworth, whose father, the famous Major Molesworth, insisted on continuing and said, this match will be forfeited unless it continues. Tommy kept playing, certainly to the detriment of his health. And they used golf balls painted red so that you could see them in the snow. They're chipping and putting through little snow drifts. It was a remarkable thing. It doesn't snow that much in St. Andrews, but it snowed like crazy that winter. And it makes for a remarkable match and a remarkable championship, and it's part of the climax of the film.
How the heck do you putt through snow in the first place?
Well, you need to chip the ball. I mean, it's pretty tough to putt, so they wind up chipping over little bits of ice and things and eventually get the ball into the hole. It didn't help their scores very much, but it's remarkable how close to a modern score Tommy could play. He was giving many strokes away. I mean, he was spotting the English champion multiple strokes every day and still making, fours and fives and sixes on the holes that we know today, in with snow all over the golf course. So to me, it's one of the most dramatic things that ever happened in golf, and it's astonishing to me how few golfers have ever heard of that story.
Well, he is such an important figure in the history of the game, since he won more Open Championships than any other player. And since, like you said, he is out of the mists of time and the formative years of the game, you know, now 150 years old, but still every bit as poignant and as inspiring as the day it happened.
Well, I think that's right. And you know, to me, I think there should be a new tradition on the PGA Tour that on Sunday, when you start the round, every player should tip his cap to Tommy Morris. This is a young man who came out of a world of golf in which only the gentlemen were supposed to matter. They would play their club championship, and that was the big tournament, even though they didn't play very well. And here comes the son of a greenkeeper, the son of a caddy, who outplayed everybody and then demanded that he be paid part of, you know, what people put up to come and see him play. He was the first touring professional. He invented the role of the touring professional. And he needs to be remembered much more than he is. I hope the movie will help that occur, because I really think every Sunday morning, every tour player stepping on that first tee, making millions of dollars, winning millions when he wins, like Ricky Fowler did the other day, ought to just take a moment to tip his cap to Tommy Morris, the first touring pro.
Now tell us a little bit more about what day the film comes out, what cities it's going to come out in, and then how it will grow and expand through the country. Is it being released nationwide immediately, and how many theaters will it open?
It is coming out nationwide on April the 14th. It's playing in about 30 cities across the country. You won't see it in your local multiplex, but you will see it in your local art theater. It'll be in many major cities, you know, two or three theaters in New York City. It'll be in Los Angeles. It'll be in many, particularly golf cities as well. It's gonna play throughout the Sun Belt, and it will also appear soon on the Golf Channel. So I hope everyone will get in cars or golf carts and go to New York City or Los Angeles and see the premiere. But if that's not possible, you'll be able to see it either in a city fairly near you or on the Golf Channel before too long.
It'll be a nice bookend to the Masters, which ends on the 9th of April. And so it'll be a great little capstone to go and see that afterwards, you know, since everyone will be, you know, it's the return of golf up here in the north for us, you know, at this time as well. And it's the Masters. So golf, like love, is in the air. And the two of them definitely go hand in hand for Arden golfers. So now one more question before we go to break. How can people get online and learn more about the movie between now and then?
Well, they can go to TommyTheHunter.com, and not only the trailer will come up, but a lot of information about where to see the movie. Lots of great pictures of the brilliant cast of the film. And, you know, if you scroll down far enough at the website, you can even see my homely face.
All right, everybody, we've got Kevin Cook, a fantastic author and now a part-time filmmaker as well, with Tommy's Honor coming out on April 14th. By the way, Kevin, is Honor spelled the British way with a U or not?
In the movie's title spells it the British way, H-O-N-O-U-R, although their book exists in both titles. There is a UK edition that's Honor with a U, and a U.S. edition that's Honor with an O. So
what about the website? Does the website have a U in it or not?
Doesn't matter. Google is smart enough You spell it either way. It's going to send you to the right place.
Google may be smart enough, but autocorrect isn't, okay? I almost got in a lot of trouble asking a girl to go to the hickey game with me last week. Luckily, she had a sense of humor. She said, yes, if you bring chapstick.
Okay.
I'm Keith Lumley. You're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. We'll be right back with Kevin Cook in just a minute.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back in the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.